Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Jody Jackson will join us live on the field in San Francisco. The Diamondbacks have a day game. Fox Sports Arizona analyst, reporter, I should say. Jody will join us in San Francisco. Great game last night. What a great series so far. Diamondbacks winning 3 in a row. I was on that most of the night, along with some of the NBA playoff stuff. Albert Breer is someone that we've had on this show many times with the NFL Network, but he is leaving the NFL Network to join Peter King's MMQB. Of course, we have Peter with us every week during the season. So Albert Breer, I want to talk to Albert about some of the quarterback news. There's a story about Cardale Jones out there today that's just kind of crazy, and the Cardinals looking at him. And all the big trades around the quarterbacks at the top of the draft. Albert Breer will join us at 10:35. Jay Feely's going to come on board, former Arizona Cardinal kicker and a CBS analyst. He was part of the Super Bowl broadcast, too, with CBS. I want to talk to Jay about John Mara's comments, the New York Giants owner, about the kickoff being eliminated in the future from the NFL. This is not a surprise. It's something we've talked about because of concussions through the years. But there's even conversation about inserting the punt rather than the kickoff. So they would punt the ball rather than kickoffs down the road. And this is an interesting thought process. And, of course, Jay, great on the air, great as a former kicker. Give us some insight with that. So jam-packed on the guest front. And there's some other things that I saw. It's funny how in our industry it isn't always about the Eagles and Browns making a trade to have the second pick in the draft. And I'm going to get into that a little bit because I do believe the Cardinals should be considering what these teams are doing. You're never going to find a sucker twice, or at least you shouldn't, the way the Carson Palmer trade came down with the Raiders. And are the Cardinals one of those teams that at some point, you have to trade up and give up a bunch to get a quarterback and develop that quarterback? Because that is the way to go about going into a Super Bowl. Now, you'll say, well, they did it with Carson Palmer. They did it with Kurt Warner. Yeah, they've found lightning in a bottle twice. But conventional wisdom says you can't always get somebody off a scrap heap and find a way to get them to win. Or you can't find a sucker that's out there. Somebody makes a really poor personnel decision. Or can you? So I want to get into that a little bit on the show, too, today. Curt Schilling being fired by ESPN, what you put on social media reflects on your company. It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple, this one. I've read where there's some boycotts now of ESPN, that it's his freedom of speech. No, that's a company. It's a company. You can't just throw this stuff out there and not expect ramifications towards the company that you are representing. Some people see it differently than me. I see it pretty cut and dry on this. And it felt to me like Kurt was just trying to get himself blown out there. So that's on my mind. Stanley Johnson. So we have some Stanley Johnson at some point in the show today I want to get into. Stanley, sometimes you just look at stuff and say you lost by 17 to LeBron and the Cavaliers. And Stanley Johnson, I don't know what his U of A education brought to him, but when you say, I'm in LeBron James's head after you just lost by 17, and he did say that last night, I get it. You're scrambling. You're down 0-2. You're trying to find any way, any shape, any form to show that you're really in his head, all right? You're down 0-2, and you lost by 17. That's not the point in time. That's kind of like James Harden saying, yeah, I'm playing really good defense. No, you're down 0-2. You know, come on. Think about what you're saying here. Steph Curry, whether he should play tonight or not, there's really no reason for me to see Steph Curry until they take on somebody much more difficult than Houston. Because Houston's just a bunch of guys. They're not a team. They're just, when you watch Houston play, and they play tonight, and I'll watch Steph Curry. My 11-year-old's going to sit and watch Steph Curry with me. He's into the whole Steph Curry thing. He's not really into the NBA, but he loves watching Steph Curry play. The minute he starts bobbing a mouthpiece in and out of his mouth, though, that's done. I'm back coaching kids again, guys. It's very funny to see these 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds sitting there playing with their mouthpieces just like they're Steph Curry and dribbling behind their back with nobody around them. It's kind of like when the Diamondbacks went to the World Series and a bunch of kids on my son's Little League team wanted to be Craig Counsell and hold the bat like way up in the air over their heads. These little kids wanting to mimic. I get it. This is who they see. This is who they want to be. They're shooting free throws now and they're playing with their mouth guards, popping them in and out. They want colored mouth guards for our little Y team or our club team. Come on. It's fine. It's fine. So there's a lot that I want to get into. We'll get to Jody Jackson up in San Francisco here in a few minutes. I think the big story of the day, though, is the Eagles trading up to the second pick overall in the draft. And the question that you have to ask yourself on this is, now that we've had two monstrous deals in the NFL, we're 6 days away from the draft. Next week, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. If it's me, I'm thinking it's Jared Goff first, Carson Wentz second. Maybe it's because I've seen Jared Goff a lot more than I've seen Carson Wentz. I don't know. Jared Goff, does Jared Goff on billboards in Los Angeles move the needle the same as Carson Wentz? I don't know. I don't know if you need that personality in L.A. What would the NFL want to have? I think the NFL has the perfect storm. Maybe they've directed it behind the scenes to have it turn out this way. We're going to get the young quarterback on billboards. We're going to reestablish Los Angeles, not just by playing games. We're going to market the heck out of this. We're going to put him on Hard Knocks, whether Jeff Fisher wants to be there or not. The trade, though, yesterday, and it happened late in our show. So the Eagles are sitting there with Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford reportedly was, quote, hot, like not happy that the Eagles did what they did. But at some point in time, you have to go find that quarterback to take you to the next level in the next 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is. And Sam Bradford's not going to be there much longer. I thought of this deal in regards to the Arizona Cardinals. We have been talking here on the show for the last couple of years about who is going to be the replacement for Carson Palmer. And to this point, I don't see anyone on the roster that is the long-term answer. Drew Stanton is a nice enough young man, has not proven that he is a starter. Matt Barkley was a kid that went to Philadelphia, sat around there. They brought him here, not been here for a full training camp. The way the Cardinals talked at the combine, and I started writing at that point in time, yeah, they're pretty serious this offseason about doing something. You can always hope that Matt Ryan breaks free in Atlanta and you trade for Matt Ryan. That's one name in the agent circles that I've been told keep an eye on. Is Sam Bradford going to be that same sort of guy to keep an eye on? Are they Bruce Arians types of quarterbacks or Tom Moore? I always bring Tom Moore into the equation because he's the quarterback whisperer. You got to have somebody that you can get through to, and Tom Moore has got to have a say in that as well. So the Eagles trade away a lot of their players, future players. And in exchange, the Browns, who have been awful, and they have a baseball guy as part of their front office, and Paul DeBodesta. They've been laughed. They've been ridiculed. If you're a Browns fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You guys always get it wrong. But I think for where they are, this was a very smart and sharp and shrewd move. The Cardinals are set up to have success here. Let's bring it back to Arizona. The Cardinals are set up to have success here where I don't see how they're going to be in a position in the next several years to go get a top flight quarterback in the draft. They're going to be good. And look, the way it went with Tom Brady, you can always use Tom Brady as the example. You can always, well, you can find a quarterback late in the draft. I don't know. Other than the Cardinals getting really lucky with Kurt Warner being out there, and the Cardinals getting really lucky with the Raiders being just flat stupid with Carson Palmer and getting him basically for a bag of rocks, maybe you find another sucker. Maybe you find another team that can't find their backside with both hands. But chances are you need to draft that quarterback to have them long-term for success. To set this thing up, let's use Ben Roethlisberger as an example. Ben Roethlisberger has been there through thick and thin, and it's been mostly thick and not very much thin. Tom Brady, yeah, that was a late pick. Peyton Manning, he did move. So there is that chance you can find the quarterback if they're willing to move. Is it pretty advantageous to come to Arizona? Sure it is. But more often than not, you got to find a way through the draft to get that guy long term. When the Cardinals have drafted quarterbacks, you can go all the way back to Tim Rosenbaugh if you want to. When they've drafted quarterbacks, Jake, Did it work out? Yeah. The organization was at a completely different space. Matt Leinart, we all know what a train wreck that was and what a disaster that was and how we had to go through bad years. Look, I trust Steve Keim and I trust Bruce Arians, but is the trend now in the NFL that if you have that quarterback at the top, it was like a few years ago, we always bring up the Jake Locker, Christian Ponder, just train wreck of a draft, Blaine Gabbert, where guys were being reached for at a high level and they shouldn't have done that. Yeah, we have. At the same time, have the Cardinals found a quarterback here, and the only one we can point towards is Logan Thomas, through the draft that we would say, hey, yeah, they were able to develop him, and hey, no, it didn't work. Didn't work. So at some point, do you have to mortgage your future? Because basically, that's what Philadelphia is doing. Philadelphia is saying, we have enough really good players. We're just a quarterback away, and I don't think they are. Like, I really like what Cleveland did yesterday. But if Philadelphia gets the quarterback that's going to be there the next 10, 12, 15 years, I just look at Arizona and say, where are we going here on this? I'm going to enjoy the present, but present's pretty fragile. One big hit on Carson, and this thing turns into not a good setup, just not a good setup. And I don't want to go through those lean years again. We already went through them a few years back here after Warner and before Carson. It was not fun seeing all the quarterbacks come and go. Jody Jackson joins us next on the field in San Francisco. We're going to talk some Diamondbacks from last night, and today they have a day game. Then Albert Breer from the NFL Network. He is leaving the NFL Network to join Peter King. We'll talk with Albert about quarterbacks, and in particular, the story about Cardale Jones. It's not very pretty, at least from a couple scouts. And then Jay Feely will be with us on some of the possible changes in special teams in the NFL. That's all straight ahead. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
So you know you have that moment, guys, during the break, whatever it is you're doing, and you're at work right now, you're probably just now hearing that Prince died. Like, I walked out, and I'm thinking, oh, it was a pretty good segment. Walk out, and Jared said, what's new? He's like, hey, Prince died. What? So then we're scrambling during the break. We're trying to find YouTube videos of Prince because we want to, you know, like, let's go crazy. That's my era. I was Raspberry Beret. It was fine. And they've already pulled all that stuff off of YouTube. Is that right? YouTube's already taken every bit of Prince off?
Or maybe it was never on there. I don't know. I don't go and search YouTube for Prince videos, but they were all like karaoke's and people doing covers of Prince, which should never be allowed, ever. So,
covers of Prince should never be allowed. No, I mean, dearly beloved, we're gathered here today to get through this thing called life. And he's not old, though.
I know, Prince.
Wow.
Prince was really little, too. Very, very diminutive man.
Remember the halftime show he did?
Wonderful. Unreal.
No,
one of the
great.
Best.
It was a great halftime show. So, yeah, Prince died. So we're kind of just, some of you guys are like, come on, Brad, get on with it. No, this is Jody Jackson's going to join us in a minute. She's doing an interview. She's just finishing up.
Yep, she's talking to somebody down the clubhouse at AT&T Park. So,
all right, well, that's fine. It's fine. Let me. So we'll get to Jody here in a second. So let's do this. Let's get over to Stanley Johnson from last night. So Stanley Johnson, former U of A Wildcat, really liked watching him play at times. We've seen Stanley all the way back to high school, which isn't that long. I say all the way back. It was a couple of years ago. He was playing here in the Valley. Then he goes down to Tucson. He plays for a year. So now he's with the Pistons. Pistons are kind of an interesting team to me. When I watch them play, they shoot the threes really well. Drummond's a very good player that can't shoot free throws to save his life. Like, if you want a reality show, life or death, who scores 10 free throws first? DeAndre Jordan or Andre Drummond? You know, the water's filling up. In the cage, if you can't get out of the cage before they make 10 free throws, you're done. You could do some reality TV with those two. They're so bad at it. So, but I like watching the Pistons play. I thought they gave the Cavaliers a good game one. Last night, not so good. They lose by 17. So you lose by 17, and here is Stanley Johnson. After the game, you got to credit, well, you know, this was on ESPN, okay? So this was Stanley Johnson after the game about LeBron James. Check this out.
What's my message his head or in his mind or anything like that. I'm just trying to play basketball. It's up to him how he wants to react to whatever he does. I wish he would just talk him when he's like, you know, 0-0, not when he's up 16 and already got going. I think that's more, that means something. That means you're confident in yourself. You believe what you're about to do. He jabbers, he moves about sometimes. The whole team does, kind of like the little cheerleaders on the bench. Every time you walk down the right corner, they're always saying something like they're playing basketball, like they're actually in the game. There's only seven or eight players to play. I don't see why the other people are talking. They might as well just be in the stands.
I mean, come on. Are you hearing yourself? You don't think that at some point there's more jabber going on? You don't think at some point, is that really showing up LeBron? Is that really standing up to LeBron James? How about just simply that stuff doesn't matter? We lost. You got to go after LeBron James and the Cavaliers that they, quote, jabber? And you just got drilled? Am I hearing myself? Like, when you heard this, is it just me, Eric, thinking this kid's lost his mind already?
The first time I heard it was, wow, I can't wait for game three. I mean, LeBron's going to drop 80. They're going to try to run up the score and beat him by 60. And then LeBron will make some, because LeBron is so good at working with the media, he'll make some not direct jab, but he'll speak around it. Like, someone will ask him about Stanley Johnson, and he'll have a very well thought out, well rehearsed answer.
Who's he?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Because LeBron's good at doing that.
That kid or something, right?
Because LeBron has LeBron's not going to get in a pissing match with a rookie named Stanley Johnson. But he heard these comments, or someone played these comments for him. So it'll be a pretty interesting game three.
If you're Stan Van Gundy, don't you walk over to Stanley Johnson and
absolutely
just smack him upside the head?
Or you just bring him in the office, say, look, all right, we're already down 0-2. We're playing the defending Eastern Conference champs. Just please keep your mouth shut.
And the people who love this most are TNT and guys like me. You know, and I don't search this stuff out. We don't go looking for what is the most controversial thing that we can talk about today that's going to get the most clicks on a website. That's never how I set this show up. I see stuff. I react to stuff. When I see somebody do this, it's like, are you joking? So,
I mean, I appreciate the bravado. I do.
I don't.
But
not
you
if you lose by 17.
And well,
shut up.
You just have to be more careful with how you. It'd be better at the end of the series, I think, after it's all said and done. And someone asked him about his series with LeBron. Yeah, that might be a little bit better time, but not now in the middle of the series.
Well, and he also alluded to, and we don't have that sound, that he got inside of LeBron's head. So I saw that quote. What are you talking about, you got inside LeBron's head? You just lost by 17. So it's just flat stunning sometimes, some of the just idiocy that I see coming out of guys when they should be focused on the game itself rather than, yeah, I got inside LeBron's head. How'd that go for you? You lost by 17. You know, so that caught my eye from last night. There's a story today in the journal Sentinel. I'm going to talk a couple of minutes to Albert Brewer about it. We may not get Jody just because she's in the middle doing her thing down the clubhouse, which happens. Or we may get her. I don't know. I'll talk to Albert Brewer about this. I saw this morning. Bob McGinn, who's a well-respected, highly regarded writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covered the NFL for a long, 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 long time. He talked with an NFL scout about Cardale Jones, which is of interest to me because Cardale Jones' name has been linked to the Arizona Cardinals. It's a possibility of a quarterback that the Cardinals could go chase. Bob McGinn's assessment of the draft's top quarterbacks for the Journal Sentinel, one scout blasted the former Ohio State quarterback by comparing him to the biggest draft bust of all time. Now, I don't know if that is a correct way to write it. We could all talk about, was Jamarcus Russell a bigger bust than Ryan Leaf? I'm sure we could go back and forth on that. This one scout, though, said of Cardale Jones, kind of reminds me of a poor man's Jamarcus Russell. At least Jamarcus had some touch. This guy just throws the ball. His mechanics are all over the place. Not the brightest cookie in the world, said another scout. I worry about him when he gets money in his pocket. I just don't know if it's all there mentally. I mean, that's harsh. That's really harsh when you think about it. So if you're the Cardinals, are your scouts the ones that are saying this or thinking this? There are others that said you can't pass. This is one another scout on Cardale Jones. Quote, you can't pass a talent like that. If you're going to bet on one, bet on a guy with all the talent if he shows you enough want to. Now, did Tom Herman leave Ohio State, who was Cardale Jones' confidant this last season, and go down to Houston, where our guy Kyle Allen's going to go to school? Yes, he did. So after one really good season, and I don't have it in front of me, but I'm thinking Ohio State probably lost a player or two from the team from a year ago that set up Cardale Jones. But it's kind of interesting that the Cardinals are looking at this kid, and this is a couple of scouts that are just crushing him. Just flat crushing him. So that's on my mind. That story, and then the John Mara story about eliminating down the road the kickoff in the NFL. So we're going to talk to Albert Breer about that, then Jay Feely, as we continue on. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. MMQB, which is great for Peter and for Albert as well. Congratulations on that front. Was this a surprise to you?
No, I mean, I think I'd made a decision, you know, 2-3 months ago that I was going to make a change and, you know, started looking and, yeah, I mean, this was a great fit from the start. You know, there's just certain limitations working where I work now, that I think are obvious and, won't be dealing with those anymore. So that's great.
Good for you, Albert. Congratulations on that front. Let's turn our attention to the news and notes around the league. What does the top of the draft look like to you today? If the draft were held today, what would LA do, and then what would Philly do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question that it'd be Jared Goff number one to the Rams and Carson Wentz number two to the Eagles. And, you know, I don't think you make a deal like that unless you got a pretty good idea who you're getting, unless there are two Andrew Lucks on top of the draft, and there aren't this year. You know, I know most people that I talk to, at least, don't think that either of these guys are in the class of a Winston or Mariota, let alone a Luck. And so the chances that either of the teams, you know, like both the prospects to that level is unlikely. You know, so I think each of them are trading up to get a single guy. And I think for the Rams, it's Goff. And for the Eagles, it's Wentz. Not to say that, you know, it'd be totally crushing a thing if something weird happened and things went in the other direction. But I think there was a very clear target for each of those guys. And it's the same one that everybody thinks. Same ones.
I like what Cleveland did. I think it makes a lot of sense for them. I'm curious from your end, was this too steep of a price tag for Philly?
Well, I mean, for the Eagles?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think, you know, it's funny because when you're talking about these sorts of deals, there is no price tag that's too high for a franchise quarterback, you know? So, you know, if this guy winds up being, you know, if Carson Wentz winds up being a 15-year answer for the Eagles and, you know, and Jared Goff winds up being a 15-year answer for the Rams, then no one's going to look back and criticize what they did. And the ultimate example of that, and everybody goes back and looks at what the Redskins gave up to go and get Robert Griffin III, but no one remembers what the Giants gave up to get Eli Manning. Hmm. You know, if you hit on it, no one will talk about it. So if they get the quarterback right, it's a great deal for both those teams. It kind of depends on what you think about the quarterback. You know, when you look at the draft capital that both the Titans and the Browns were able to come back, it's monumental. You know, but Cleveland's been here before, and they got huge hauls of draft picks. You know, in trades that involved Mark Sanchez and Julio Jones. You know, and more recently Sammy Watkins. You know, and there aren't very many players left in those trades, so. The amount of draft picks looks great on paper, but you have to nail them. And that's harder said than done. So, you know, I think the bottom line with all of it is ultimately it comes down to, you know, drafting the right player. And, you know, the upshot for the Rams and the Titans or the Rams and the Eagles here is that they think they're answering the question at the absolute most important position on the field. But the upshot for the other two teams is that, you know, they've got a shot to answer multiple questions, and they've built some margin for error for themselves.
Kind of curious, we're talking with Albert Breer, NFL Network. He's going to be joining Peter King's MMQB site. Of course, Peter is a weekly guest with us as well, so looking forward to having Albert on that team. Paxton Lynch in all this, is he still a mid-first, or because the market is defining itself at quarterbacks at 1 and 2, could you see a team grabbing him earlier than maybe he's warranted to be selected into the top 10 or near the top 10?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all talk about like where a quarterback should go, and it's hard. You know, I mean, if you go back to 2011, Christian Ponder and Jake Locker and Blaine Gabbert all went inside the top 12.
Right.
Then the lessons of that resonated 3 years later. Derek Carr falls into the second round, and he looks like he's absolutely going to be the answer for the Oakland Raiders. So, I think it's a year-by-year thing, you know, and some years you see the quarterback market heat up. Other years teams are more cautious, and this seems to be one of those years where teams are going to be more aggressive. So if you had asked me 2 weeks ago about Paxton Lynch, I would have told you there might have been a shot that he could fall to the bottom of the first round. Now, I think the likelihood is he goes inside the top 12 picks and probably somewhere in that sweet spot between 8 and 12 where Cleveland and Chicago and New Orleans pick, and I think all three of those teams like him. So I don't think that Paxton Lynch gets out of the first half of the first round. And on top of that, I think there's a chance that five quarterbacks go inside the first 31 picks. Maybe not a likelihood, but a chance that happens. And, you know, again, I would have told you a couple of weeks ago that maybe five go in the top 50, but I don't think I ever would have thought before these trades happened that we would have had that sort of haul on top of the draft like it looks like we're going to have now.
We could see it. Out here, it's been no secret. Bruce Arians and Steve Keim have said we've got to find that replacement for Carson eventually. Cardale Jones is somebody who's been on the radar screen. I don't know if you've seen or heard Bob McGinn's article in the Journal Sentinel of a scout saying that Cardale reminds him of a poor man's Jamarcus Russell. That's causing a lot of stir and uproar. What's your view of Cardale Jones? You're a Buckeye guy. I mean, you see that. What do you feel? What do you see?
Yeah. I think he's a very raw prospect. There's no question about that, you know. And he walked into a fairly ideal situation in 2014 where he had the deep threat that was as good as anyone in the country in Devin Smith. You know, he had a running game. And, you know, really, he could just go out there and play. Things changed in 2015. He lost Tom Herman as his offensive coordinator. He lost Devin Smith, so the field gets condensed a little bit. I think teams caught up to him a little bit. So I think you're drafting somebody who you're going to have to allow to sit and develop for a little while and who's going to take a little while to grow. That doesn't mean he can't eventually become something, but I think the Jamarcus Russell comparison is off base because of all the off-field stuff that Jamarcus had.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cardale is my understanding of it at least, a very good-hearted kid who's just that, you know, who's been a little bit of a kid and was a little immature early when he got to school and, has kind of had to do some growing up and probably still has some growing up to do, you know. So, you know, I think you're dealing with somebody who has a lot of potential and probably would be best going to a situation where he could just kind of sit in the background and learn. And I think where he'll be drafted will probably afford him that chance.
In knowing Bruce Arians and Tom Moore and the culture out here with Steve Keim, is there a quarterback in this year's class you look at and say, that would be a good fit for Arizona?
I think Christian Hackenberg, who is probably as polarizing a prospect as I've come across in, you know, my years of asking people who really know, you know, people who are out there in the fall and everything else. That I've come across, you know, I've talked to some people who think he shouldn't be drafted, you know, which seems crazy, but there are some people out there who just look at his tape and say, he just doesn't have it. Then there are other people who will tell you that he absolutely is a first round talent and could be worth a first round pick because of the physical ability, the head he has for the game and the success he had in the pro style offense as a freshman under Bill O'Brien. And those people tend to blame James Franklin a little bit more for what happened the last couple of years and the scholarship reductions, obviously. Those really came to roost over the last 2 years because those, the lost recruiting classes those classes were becoming juniors and seniors over the last couple of years. And so that's when the effect of everything really started to hit. So I think based on the physical ability, his size and his head for the game and, all of that, like, I think that actually could be a pretty good marriage, because you will be giving him a chance to sit. He can learn from Carson Palmer. And everything that I've heard, he's got a pretty good demeanor for the game. So he'd be able to take the kind of hard coaching that he would get there in Arizona.
Appreciate the time and the insight. Congratulations again on joining Peter. Look forward to visiting with you down the road, Albert.
All right. Thanks.
There's Albert Breer, NFL Network, joining us for a few minutes and moving over to Peter King's MMQB and all things around the NFL draft and the quarterback. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I want to talk a little further about the John Mara comments that came out from the competition committee. Of course, the owner of the Giants, quote, "We're not at the point where we want to take the kickoff out of the game completely, although we may be moving in that direction," Mara said. "One of the concerns is, what do you do in a situation where you've scored late in the game and you're down by less than a touchdown and it takes away the onside kick?" Further and further, he went on this. Jay Feely, the former Arizona Cardinal, CBS Sports analyst, he was on the sideline at the Super Bowl doing a great job, a riser, as we like to say, in the community, joins us, the broadcast community, joins us here for a couple of minutes. What do you make out of the possibility, Jay? I know this has been brought up before with concussions and all that, of eliminating the kickoff, and now John Mara going a little further with it. What do you make out of all this?
Well, I think the league is making decisions, Brad, that are not necessarily based specifically on player safety, but more mitigation of liability. Mm. You know, I think that they see those plays and they see the high number of injuries, and they understand that it leaves them open for continued litigation, specifically in regard to the concussion lawsuit that is now going through the appeals court. And I think that's what a lot of their decisions are being based on. When you look at kickoff returns, it's the most exciting play in the game. You know, when you have a kickoff return for a touchdown, there's no play that's more electric, that gets fans into the game, that has people jump out of their seats than something like that. And so eliminating that play, I think, takes away something of beauty from the game. And so I've always been opposed to that. I also, at the same time, want to try and create a more safe environment. And when you have 280-pound guys in a wall, in a wedge, and they're running, 20 yards forward at guys that have just run 60 yards full sprint as fast as they can the opposite way, you have a situation where it's not if somebody's going to get injured, it's just when and how badly. And so you have to find ways to change those plays to make them safer while still trying to keep the integrity of the play and what makes that play great and what fans love, the excitement of it. So I think they're flailing a little bit. I think they've made some poor decisions in regard to it. You know, when you just say, okay, we're going to move it up 5 yards and we're going to have a lot more touchbacks. Well, they didn't talk to kickers either time. And when they made the first decision and they said, we're going to move it up 5 yards, and we think it'll only increase percentage 10 to 15% of touchbacks. All the kickers in the league were like, no, you're crazy. You have no idea. Now we're going to line drive the ball out of the back of the end zone. And you saw it went up to, say, 60% touchbacks, twice what they thought it was going to be. This change, Brad, it will have the opposite impact. They think that it's going to create more touchbacks, that the return team is going to be less incentivized to bring the ball out because they're going to get the ball at the 25-yard line, which is true. But kickers in the NFL, and every kicker I talked to when they made this rule change said the same thing, will no longer kick the ball deep for a touchback. Now they're going to kick high hang time kicks that come down at the goal line and force the returners to bring it out. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a change. And the reason I say this is because if you made this rule change and as a coach you said, okay, my goal is to kick 100% touchbacks, we're not going to have one single return all year, then you'd have an average start of the 25-yard line because they're going to get a touchback. Now the new rule change, they're going to bring it out to the 25-yard line. And if that was the case, you would have been dead last in the NFL last year for average start given up. Hmm. Only one team, the Minnesota Vikings, were over 25 yards. They were 25.1 yards. So as a coach, are you going to say, I'm okay with being dead last in the NFL in average start, you know, where you're giving up 3 to 5 yards? And the other interesting thing is when you look at the difference between starting at the 20 to the 25 yard line, it's a difference of close to 10 percentage points when you look at the ability to score a touchdown. So it's a substantial difference, that 5 yards, especially in that area of the field, which when you have games that are decided by 3 points or less, can play a big part in the outcome of games and the length of the season. So I just think the coaches that I've talked to, special teams coaches, said the same thing. We're not kicking it deep anymore. Hmm. Even teams that led the league in kickoff percentage last year, kickoff touchback percentage, they have a strong leg of kicker, said, we're not kicking touchbacks anymore. We're going to hit high hang time kicks. We're going to cover them. We're going to tackle them inside the 20-yard line. And I think they're going to see the inverse effect that they thought they would.
John Mara also said, and we're talking with Jay Feely, CBS analyst, former Cardinal kicker, former NFL kicker, you could very well, quoting him, you could very well see the kickoff eliminated at some point in time in the future, but I don't think we're at that point yet. It still does remain an exciting play, but it's also a dangerous play. Obviously, concussions are on the top of our list of items of concerns to the game going forward. I've even read, and this wasn't from John Mara, that punting the football instead of kicking it off, what would you think of that taking place instead, Jay?
Well, I saw Chris Collinsworth put a tweet out last night, and he mentioned that in the tweet. Mike Westhoff, one of the great teams coaches of all time, the guy I played for with New York Jets, has long put out an idea of changing kickoffs, not where you'd punt it. You would still kick off, but you would implement punt-type rules. Hmm. You know, and his idea, which I think is the best that I've heard, and I would have, when the NFL made the original changes, I would have implemented this change because I think it keeps the excitement of the kickoff return and the possibility of a kickoff return for a touchdown while trying to mitigate the risk of injuries. And what you would do essentially is you would say, okay, 8 of the return members, 8 of the 11, have to be within 15 yards of the ball. And you would still have the 10-yard buffer rule, so you would still have the opportunity to kick onside kicks. But that next 5 yards, you would have 8 guys in there. And so essentially that would be the line of scrimmage. And 8 of your 11 guys have to be within that 5-yard frame. And right now, 6 or 7 start in that area on any team on any given point. And if you have an onside kick situation, you have 8 up there. So it's not that unrealistic to think that that would be hard to implement. And then the other 3 guys that you would have back returning would have to be either DBs, wide receivers, running backs, guys that are not your, you know, 280-pound guys. You know, and you can limit it by number just like they do, you know, offensive line, all the different positions with the number. It wouldn't be hard to implement. But what you would end up doing is creating blocking schemes where you're running, dropping, and then getting the man versus running straight ahead and colliding into each other.
Right.
And so you'd eliminate a lot of those big, huge type blocks. You don't see the same injury data on punt returns as you do on kickoff returns because everybody's starting at the line of scrimmage and you're running next to a man and you're getting in position and blocking him, not running straight ahead and having these huge collisions.
Got about 45 seconds in the segment. How do you think this ends up? Is this just going to be an ongoing dialogue and debate, or do you see real change coming?
No, I think it'll continue to change. I mean, they made one change and moved it up 5 yards and increased the touchbacks dramatically. Now they made another change this year. My feeling is they're going to see the inverse opinion and the outcome is going to be the opposite of what they expected. But I think you'll continue to see changes, and hopefully they'll try something like Mike Westhoff's measure that he put forward, because I just don't want to see the kickoff and the kickoff return go away. I think you see some of the most dynamic athletes in all sport returning kicks and some of the most exciting plays in all sports. Think back, you know, to some of the great Super Bowl moments where Desmond Howard returned a kickoff for a touchdown and won the game for Green Bay. I mean, some of those plays change games.
Appreciate the insight, Jay. Thanks.
Sure, Brad. Thanks for having me, bud.
It's Jay Feely with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, of course, our football show. Brad Sismat, Football AZ. You can check it out on Fox Sports Arizona. Back with more after this timeout.